through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
It is Jake and Stacy. Now, normally after every Seahawks game on Monday, we do what caught our eye, and that doesn't stop now that the Seahawks are out of it, because there's plenty that they and Seahawks fans can learn from these games. So let's go ahead and do what caught our eye. Divisional round. Jake, why don't you get us started?
Well, there is a common theme in the playoffs.
Okay.
And this game could be as simple as this. Playoff football is all about turnovers. It is all about protecting the ball. And that is Pete Carroll's number one rule when it comes to football philosophy. And when you're in the playoffs, the margin for error is razor thin. And you know what the other thing that stinks is having your season end due to silly mistakes. It stinks to be here as a Seahawks fan and to see that pick six happen when you know it should have never happened if your players had just executed the plan. You could talk about the setup. You could talk about the play being something that the Rams have seen before. But still, if David Moore does his job, it doesn't happen. So silly mistakes. And you hate to see that happen, right? For a guy like Drew Brees to see three interceptions happen on a big, big stage in a big moment like that, man, it's tough. It's tough to walk away from that. To see Lamar Jackson, the Ravens, play as good of a game as they played against. Their defense was playing really good football against the Buffalo Bills. And for that game to get away from them just like that with a pick six, Taron Johnson. Playoff football, all about turnovers. If you can limit the turnovers and you can actually win the turnover margin, you give yourself a tremendous chance to win the game. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they didn't necessarily go and take that game over and win it. They were able to capitalize on turnovers in short field. That, to me, was the difference in the game between the Bucs and the Saints.
Now, you have to win the turnover battle, yes. But I think this also shows, Jake, that you can't depend on turnovers in order for your team to advance. Because I think that had been the Rams' bread and butter. Their defense was so stinking good this year. Like, I cannot stress enough how good they were this year. It felt impossible at times that teams could beat them. And yes, the Green Bay Packers did, but that was in part because Jared Goff, who played a decent game, had his best passer rating since October 26th this year. Their offense just couldn't outshoot Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay's offense. They couldn't stay toe-to-toe. They couldn't win in a shootout. The Green Bay Packers' defense was not better than the Rams' defense. It's just that the Rams' offense was their weak spot heading into the game. And that doesn't mean they don't have some great weapons, but, I mean, you can't lean on just that. You need to be well-balanced. You need to be able to execute. You need to be able to stay toe-to-toe with the competition. We knew going into this game, the Rams were probably going to need a defensive score to advance. That's how they kept winning.
Yeah,
it was. To be totally honest, it's how they kept winning, and they didn't do it. Speaking of Taron Johnson, shout out to Taron Johnson. I don't know if I mentioned this, for being the same defensive back that got hit in the face at the NFL Combine. One of probably the most embarrassing moments he's had in his life. I'm not making fun of him for this. I'm saying that what a turnaround to be able to say, oh yeah, I saw you guys laughing at that, but guess what? I just made NFL playoff history with this return. Can we play that one more time? Cut number two, play-by-play of that return.
Takes the snap, drops back the pass, steps up in the pocket, throws to the end zone. It's intercepted! Intercepted by Johnson, who's going to come back on the near side to the 30, 35, 40, inside Ravens territory. He's got Jackson to beat to the 20, 10, near side 5, touchdown Bills! A pick 6 of 100 yards!
Plays like this are the universal language of sports. I have a friend who doesn't watch sports at all, couldn't tell you more than maybe 5 players in the NFL total, who texted me in this moment. She was watching it with 2 friends and said, did you just see that? I mean, that is when sports fans who are just kind of sports fans that kind of check it out, understand what it means to fall in love with sports. It is just this universally exciting moment. Props to him. Amazing play.
Those are moments, Stacy, that when you look at plays like that, those can define a career. that can define a career for a guy like Taron Johnson, right? And when you talk about Buffalo Bills fans and they are advancing into the playoffs farther than they've ever advanced before, Bills fans forever will remember him. And he will be a legend in that town for those types of moments. And I think with this defense in particular, the offense has gotten a lot of the love, obviously with Josh Allen and his play and what Stephon Diggs and those guys have been able to do. But Taron Johnson in that defense, they've played very, very good football, and they deserve a lot of the credit.
The top text, Jake, on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line from the 206. What a turn from that lack of a turnaround at the combine. Yikes. Next. Take it away.
Take it away. First, I have to address people who are texting me and saying it was Freddie Swain that missed the block and not David Moore. You are wrong. Don't question me on this. It was David Moore, okay? Go back and watch the play. That is a two-receiver screen. It is David Moore is the guy who is primarily responsible for going and making that block. I know that play. I ran it before in that huddle. I know exactly what that call was. It was David Moore, and Freddie Swain is there to help David Moore. So
the amount of nights lost to sleep that Jake has had because of that play, don't question him.
Yes. My wife wondering, why are you up at 3 in the morning right now?
Yeah, in your sleep, she overhears you say, make the block, David. Make the block.
No! Yeah. Yes. Okay. All right. I have to move on from that. But that really, really caught my eye. One of the other things that really stood out to me over the weekend, just offensive line play. The offensive line play from the playoff teams that we saw over the weekend was outstanding. And when you talk about the one thing that separates the Seahawks or that those teams are separated from the Seahawks with, it's offensive line play. It's the fact that they have those teams had a group of guys, their front five, being able to control the game, running the ball, protecting their quarterback, it's setting the tone, I thought was outstanding. And that goes for pretty much every single team that I watched. There was not one weak link that I watched over the weekend and said, yeah, that offensive line just really wasn't good, or they were overmatched. It was not that whatsoever. And you cannot have that if you're the Seahawks moving forward. You cannot continue to thumb through Groupon to try and add to their offensive line. You can't look
deals.
For those bargain deals, okay? As great
really
as they
do.
Are and as addicting as it is to look through Groupon and go, wow, that's a deal. I got to capitalize on that. You have to get serious and add with legitimate talent this offseason. You cannot have a Jack Conklin situation pass you by just simply because you want to add competition and have 18 to 20 offensive linemen competing for a couple spots. You know the additions you need to make. Center, left guard, go get it done.
It really is one of those things that you especially don't want to save money, right? Like, you can get a number three, number four receiver that excels at one or two things and is just not your primary target for most because he's got some serious drawbacks. Well, yeah, that's why he's like the number four receiver. Trying to skim and save money on your offensive line is like getting a Lambo and deciding just to put like basic gas. Like, you're not going with premium or anything. It's like spending like $200 on your hair and then buying $2 shampoo. Like, why are you spending that much money on one thing and then investing absolutely no money to take care of it or protect it? It makes no sense. And I read this last weekend heading into the games, but when you look at the final offensive line rankings this season from Pro Football Focus, number one, Jake, Cleveland. Number two, Green Bay. Number three, the LA Rams. Tampa Bay's 5. New Orleans is 8. Buffalo, 10. Kansas City is number 11. Really, no one else that's still in the playoffs was further than that. So
it seems pretty clear, doesn't it?
Make of that what you will. Next. All right. Now, I know DK Metcalf was watching this moment. It's that pre-snap motion with Devontae Adams versus the Rams, and Jalen Ramsey swaps him over from the left to the right side. Ramsey gets mixed up in coverage there. It looks like he's initially going to follow him, and then it looks like it might be someone else's assignment. I forget who is over on that right side, but ends up being a touchdown to Adams. This is exactly the moment that if I'm DK Metcalf, I'm watching it saying, find a way to do this to me. Find a way to get me in space. How many times, Jake, last week did we say, you know what great offensive coordinators do? Find a way to get their best weapons the ball and help them make the most of it. Get those matchups. Jalen Ramsey and Davante Adams were going to be going at each other all game. We knew that. And yet up against the goal line, when it mattered most, they found a way to create some confusion on the back end for the Rams. And it worked.
Yeah.
Davante Adams got the ball.
Certainly
scored
did.
Six.
You know what the most satisfying feeling as a play caller is and as a quarterback is to watch a guy like Jalen Ramsey get burned. He's in man-to-man coverage. And you know what he ends up doing? He ends up blaming somebody else for him being out of position and giving up a touchdown. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, Ramsey is turning back inside and yelling at somebody else. I love that.
Well, that's why
they
were like, wait, if it's like, man, you're covering this dude, why are you turning to someone else? And if it's not, why are you tracking him? It just...
Great question.
Yeah.
All great questions, Stacey, because at the end of the day, it's on Jalen Ramsey, nobody else. So it's the greatest feeling when you are able to cause that much confusion and frustration. All right. There were two things that really caught my eye when I was watching the Bucks and Saints game. One, leave it up to Troy Aikman, who is the master.
Jake.
Who is the master at the slight
Your
dig.
Feud has gone too far. You can't go a day without mentioning how much you hate Troy Aikman. Enemy of the show, Troy Aikman.
Yeah, he's got real estate in my head.
All
but
right.
He is the master.
Join the show
Living
time.
He
there
is the
free.
Master of the slight dig during a broadcast. And during the broadcast, he said, man, Tom Brady... It is amazing what he is doing, and gosh, you look at the weapons that he has, and he has got a significant upgrade from the group that he was dealing with last season in New England.
Where's the lie?
No lie. Slight dig.
No lie.
Beautiful. But if you're a Patriots fan, how much did that hurt? That hurt a lot, because that was the number one reason why Tom Brady is no longer a New England Patriot. It is the number one reason, Stacey.
You don't buy into the idea that a little bit of that was wanting Belichick and Kraft to share some of the credit a bit more with him?
No, I don't think so.
Maybe I just liked it for dramatic effect.
I think that partly had something to do with it. Why? Why did Tom Brady feel that way? Because you weren't giving Tom Brady what he was asking for, Stacey. Tom Brady wanted weapons. And what he was dealing with over the last 2 years was not that. He didn't have the offensive firepower that he needed to be able to be successful. And after that last season, I promise you that there was a conversation with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, and Brady said, I need help. And Belichick said, you're not going to get it. You're not going to get what you're asking for. And Brady said, okay, then I'm gone. Mm-hmm. I think it was pretty much that simple. And now you see him in Tampa with a bevy of weapons at receiver, tight end, running back. They've got a great group surrounding Tom Brady, and that was a nice little slight dig that Troy Aikman threw in there. But the other thing that just was throwing me off all game long.
Oh, God.
Can we talk about Bruce Arians looking like an absolute fool with his mic belt that's supposed to be around his waist, and he had it strapped around him like a Gucci man purse? Yeah, I said purse.
Don't bring Gucci into this.
It irked me to no end. He looked like an absolute fool wearing his belt all across his chest like this.
Does this serve a practical purpose? Is there a reason that he has it maybe a little higher up than his waist?
No.
Maybe?
No.
Okay.
Maybe he just doesn't like the feeling around his waist. I don't know. Look ridiculous.
Yeah, I decided to not read any further into Bruce Arians' fashion choices when I saw him in the pageboy cap and transition lenses at a Seahawks game. I decided like that was the moment when I can't spend any more time talking about this man is living in his own lane and he is thriving. You know?
Someone out there is driving with transition lenses and going,
man,
hey! Hey, why are you taking a shot at me? What's wrong with
show email?
What's wrong with transition lenses?
Look, it's not you, it's me. That's just when I decided that he's going to go his own way. And he's fine with it, and that's his style. He's going to be like, no one tells me what to do. I'm Bruce Arians.
It wasn't the hat choice that he had in Arizona?
It was both combined. Okay. It was both combined. All right,
gotcha.
Let's get to NFL headlines. Sorry. Brandon Staley, former defensive coordinator for the Rams, now the head coach of the Chargers. Just 4 years ago, he was the defensive coordinator for D3 John Carroll University. What an ascension for him in the NFL. Now, he originally came in with the Denver Broncos, correct me if I'm wrong, as an outside linebackers coach for them, briefly spent time with the Bears as well before...
Then Broncos. Yeah.
And then went to the Rams, which is where that connection with Leonard Floyd is. I know that there are people that will point to him and say, man, this guy gets a head coaching position after such limited time, but his players spoke so highly of him.
Yes, they did.
It is hard not to put weight into what guys like Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey have said.
100%. And when you look at what your head coach did for you, right? Sean McVay gave an unbelievable recommendation about Brandon Staley. When you say that I think this guy might be more obsessed with football than me, when you have a reputation in Sean McVay as being one of those guys that is just a football savant, that's going to make people really turn their heads. And then you hear Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, he doesn't just praise anybody. You have to earn Jalen Ramsey's respect, and he gave him, you know, a ton of praise for what he was able to do. So although I'm surprised to see Brandon Staley get this opportunity, I thought Brian Daboll, honestly, the Bills offensive coordinator, was a better fit for this job in terms of, you know, Justin Herbert and Daboll, and I thought that would be a really good fit with the Chargers. But Brandon Staley, I think, has a really good chance of turning that talented Chargers defense into something really fierce. And now it comes down to Staley's ability to hire a really good offensive coordinator to continue Justin Herbert in his development and continue to help him play at a high level. If they can get that done, the Chargers become a real, real difficult team and a team that you have to take seriously in a hurry. But yeah, I mean, it's a quick ascension when you talk about 4 years ago being a D3 defensive coordinator at John Carroll University.
Well, he's like 35, 36 years old. I mean, there are going to be quite a few West Coast teams, obviously, in multiple conferences with coaches that are under 40.
Yeah.
And then you've got Pete Carroll.
It's incredible.
Sometimes there's a part of me that doesn't not want it to work out, but that hates the trend of thinking that if you are younger, you are immediately a better option. But then I think, I think I just don't like this because so many people are on board with it, and I want to go against the grain.
Well, I don't think it has anything to do with age, that you're younger, which means you're better. I truly believe it has to do with more of what you're willing to do. How creative can you be? And how are you willing to evolve and learn and grow and keep up with the trends? I think that's more of what it's associated with. And age might be part of that, Stacey, but I really feel like that is really at the crux of it. But it is hard to see somebody like Brandon Staley get this opportunity and see somebody like Eric Bieniemy, who also is getting a bunch of praise from his players, mm-hmm. and has gotten a very glowing recommendation from Andy Reid. And you don't see Bieniemy really being at the forefront of getting jobs. And I don't know what his interview process is like. I have no idea. So I can only speculate from the outside. It just doesn't seem right. Right? There's something...
The lack of interest. It makes no sense. Well, speaking of, our second headline there, the Texans will conduct their long-awaited virtual interview with Eric Bieniemy today. Now, I don't mean to bring this up as any kind of, you know, record that I'm pointing to, but just while we're talking about it, Patrick Mahomes did recently like a tweet of someone making fun of the Houston Texans taking so long for interviewing his offensive coordinator, Eric Bieniemy. So clearly, Patrick Mahomes, not a fan of the dragging the feet job the Texans have done with this. That's all I'm saying.
I think that is a really important aspect of this, though. If you got Patrick Mahomes that is really advocating for a guy like Eric Bieniemy, what are you holding off on? And that's the part that I don't know, right? I think that people obviously jump to the conclusion that, okay, well, this league is inherently racist, that there's a lack of diversity in head coaches, right? That's one thing that you point to. What if Eric Bieniemy just isn't going in there and wowing people in the interview process like some of these other coaches are? Mm-hmm. And maybe people are looking at the interview process in a way that they shouldn't. Maybe they should be looking at Bieniemy's track record and the endorsement. Thank you from the 253. Endorsement, Jake, the word you're thinking of. So appreciate that. Yes, endorsement from his players and endorsement from his fellow coaches and Andy Reid. I think that those should carry a lot of weight with future opportunities. But I don't know. We'll see what ends up happening here.
Eagles left tackle Jason Peters says he wants to return next season for another shot at a Super Bowl, but doesn't expect he'll play for Philadelphia. We've been talking about the offensive line. Now, obviously, the Seahawks don't need a left tackle, but where do you think he could end up? That's a big question to ask. There's a lot of teams that are going to need left tackle help. Better question, do you see him getting a chance?
No. At this stage of his career, big name, not the type of player that you want at left tackle. When your team, who knows you the best, is saying, Jason Peters' days at left tackle are done. We're going to move him to left guard. I don't think that that's a glowing endorsement for somebody like Jason Peters. Great player in this league, a tremendous sustained success. But, you know, there comes a point in a time where it's probably time to hang it up, much like, you know, Mike Iupati has had a great career in this league. The injuries, his ability to move around and stay healthy through an entire year, it's just time, you know? And I think that Jason Peters, if he has a desire to play, I think he'll get a shot, but it's not going to be at left tackle.
Someone mad that I was hating on transition lenses. You know what? My goal every day is to make three enemies. If I've made three enemies, I've had a good show. That's my thought. NFL Network's Steve Weiss says the relationship between Jared Goff and his head coach, Sean McVay, will need repairing this offseason. Cut number six. Here's Weiss.
So I think a lot of people are wondering, is they're going to bring in a veteran type of quarterback to push Jared Goff this offseason, or to at least have that threat there as a backup to see if they can elevate Goff. And people I've spoken to said basically at this moment the relationship with Goff and McVay, not great. They need marriage counseling, is what one person said to me. I think this is something that they're going to be able to work through, but there's got to be some healing, and that's not just with Jared Goff's injured thumb.
Man, if I'm Sean McVay, I want to move on. He is a brilliant offensive mind, it sure would seem. And he is being hamstrung a little bit, it sounds like, by the ceiling of his own quarterback. Why are you looking at me?
I'm not looking at you for this, but I have a hard time having any sympathy for Sean McVay.
That's what I'm... Oh, you mean because in your mind... Well, that's part of an organizational decision, too, to extend
You off. Had the opportunity to tell your organization. You don't think your GM and your owner would have listened to you and
yeah,
said,
but
hey,
I think after 2018,
this is me. I'm making Jared Goff better than what he actually is, and we shouldn't pay this guy this big of a contract because it's going to put us in a bad spot. We can move on and find somebody else.
They didn't have
Sean
a lot
McVay
of draft
found
capital.
Out, he found out 1 year too late.
They did, yes. But I don't think that's a fault of his own per se. I think some of that was unforeseen circumstances. Who saw Todd Gurley having the drop-off he did? Who saw him going from the best weapon they had on offense, someone that made your offense go and that made Goff so explosive, that gave you the best offense, one of the best, certainly the top two offense, in 2018?
That's a good point.
That just dropped off, so much so that people were scratching their heads wondering what the heck you were doing without him in the Super Bowl.
It's a good point.
He wasn't old.
But still, you're telling me that Todd Gurley is the difference between Jared Goff being able to throw the ball downfield and make good reads down the field? I don't think
so. Well, not make good reads. No, I can't.
I mean, Sean McVay can't even trust the guy to throw the ball downfield.
But they also had traded a couple first-round picks at that point, Jake.
They had, but I'm telling you, this is, with Sean McVay and the wording that he's using with Jared Goff, that is big-time trouble. And Sean McVay was a big believer in Jared Goff, and then all of a sudden this has just changed and flipped. I mean, they're in a pretty interesting situation because you look at somebody like Carson Wentz, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody out there, I believe, would be willing to trade for Carson Wentz because they look at his skill set and say, man, if we can turn Carson Wentz around, there is something there. He brings unique talent. Who's saying that about Jared Goff? Who is looking around the league, Curtis Rogers and Stacey? Who's looking around the league and going, man, if I could just tap into Jared Goff's ceiling, this guy could be special. He could be
Adam
a
Gase.
Difference maker. Adam Gase currently doesn't have a job.
Sure looks like he's on his way to get
I know.
One.
What are you talking about? I
Watch
think he's
out.
Looking saying, let's get a quarterback controversy here happening in Seattle.
I mean,
No,
they're stuck.
I agree. I agree. I think that Jared Goff has a very obvious ceiling, and he was great in an offense that gave him the opportunities to make mistakes or gave him opportunities to, you know, get some bootleg action in there. Get it, you know, roll out well. Okay, and continue. Look, I don't know why I'm defending Sean McVay. What am I doing? This is not my best look today. If you missed the show, you can always listen via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. There's a couple things the Seahawks learned from the Packers this weekend. We'll tell you what they are next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This is always a great song.
Great song.
Great song. Solid. Were you thinking of a joke that you could make about age that you couldn't just squeak it out in time? I could see the wheels turning.
No, that does happen to me often.
I know.
If I could just be just a little more clever, I could throw in a little one-liner at the end.
We talked about some things that the Seahawks could have learned watching the Packers beat the Rams this past weekend. Now, there are a couple obvious ones, like issues with game planning we can talk about. But then there are a few, I want to say, like, lessons I learned about where this team is. So why don't you start us with game planning, because you had some good points.
Yeah, I mean, Stacey, really when it comes down to it, we talk about game planning. The Packers did everything that the Seahawks should have and everything that the Seahawks really didn't do. They were able to start the game off, run the ball effectively. They were getting the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands, which they should have done with Russell Wilson. I mean, the Seahawks consistently, it just continues to baffle me when I go back and think about it, is you would get the run game going with Chris Carson, and immediately you would turn to a deep play-action shot or a seven-step drop, deep, long, developing play down the field. And there were times where, gosh, if Russ just had one more second, he could complete that ball and it would be a big play down the field. Well, guess what? You didn't have that second. You knew that. Coming into that game, you knew you weren't going to have that 1 second. And you needed to do a variety of different things to either slow down that pass rush so you could get to those plays later on, or just accept the fact that you need to abandon those plays for the majority of the game and start the game off by not allowing that Rams defensive line to dictate and set the tempo of that game or set the tone for that game. And that's exactly what the Packers did. They did not allow the Rams defensive front to really set the tone for the game for the Rams, and instead they were constantly on their heels.
Yeah, I mean, I think too, like, even quick passes. I mean, I said this earlier, but I think that multiple actors in this Seahawks loss could have looked at this game and each one of them thinking, if only we would have done this, would have been right. So Chris Carson thinking, if only we could have run the ball more, would have been right. Pete Carroll thinking, if only we would have gotten the ball out more quickly, would have been right. All of that was important, but like, nothing came together when it mattered most. And that ultimately does fall on coaching. Yes, it falls on execution, but we talked about the game plan. We weren't the only ones. Experts were talking about the game plan the Seattle Seahawks needed to have heading into this game. Mm-hmm. And bless their hearts, like, it did not come to fruition. Like, they did not execute the game plan, I'm sure, that they wanted to. Or maybe they just took an approach we weren't expecting, seeing something on tape from LA that made them think it would work.
Really, honestly, there wasn't anything that the Green Bay Packers did that was revolutionary, that was like, oh my gosh, you see that one play that was unbelievable.
No, it was like, use play action.
The one thing that they did do, Stacey, that I thought was brilliant was them in the low red zone moving Devontae Adams formationally, yeah, moving him across the field, seeing that Jalen Ramsey was in motion, and then motioning him back to get Jalen Ramsey out of position.
And getting him the ball in a split second.
Correct. And
Rodgers knew right away.
Right. And Aaron also is on a sprint right movement where he is not sitting in the pocket, ball's out of his hands right away. And I thought that that was a brilliant play call. But overall, I thought that Matt LaFleur completely outcoached the Rams, and without meaning to, he made the Seahawks offensive game plan look silly. Like, he really did. And it was unfortunate. And this is an opportunity that I hope that when you look at it from Pete Carroll's perspective, because this is the one that really matters, is that this moment is seared into Pete Carroll's brain. that, hey, look at the game plan, look at the way that they were able to, from the Packers' perspective, able to dice up the number one defense in the league and yet still have all the components of what you like to do. They ran for 188 yards on the ground, Stacey. Aaron Rodgers, they put up over 500 yards of total offense.
Aaron Jones had 99 yards, rushing yards.
Yes, and Aaron Rodgers is able to get two touchdowns down the field. He should have had three. He should have had three touchdowns if he's able to connect on the double move on Marquez Valdes-Scantling. I know I just butchered that.
You were so close.
He throws one out of bounds, and then you have another throw down the right sideline that that you have Lazard who drops one as well. I mean, so they had opportunities to be aggressive, to be explosive, to put Aaron Rodgers in great positions, to get Davante Adams the ball in a variety of different ways, and yet still be able to run the football and control the game. So what you really need, if you're the Seahawks, you need a great offensive line that can control the game, but you need an offensive innovator, somebody that is creative, somebody that can walk into any game, any matchup, and you feel just as confident versus any defense in the league that they can come up with solutions. And that's what Matt LaFleur and the Green Bay Packers did. They came up with solutions to the problem.
Now, game planning wasn't the only difference, and I can't stress that enough, because another thing I noticed coming out of this game is the pieces Seattle still needs to find. And I don't know when it became controversial to say that your team's missing pieces. Like earlier, I was talking about the Seahawks roster and whether they were good enough. And I was like, no, they have pieces they still need. And someone texted in and said, well, wait a minute. You've got a top running back, best wide receiver duo, a decent line. And I was like, well, wait, hold on. Your offensive line ranked like middle of the league. Your running back could leave in free agency. Like, you've actually got a lot of things you want to fix.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be controversial to say that. You should be watching this game and saying, oh, yeah, you know what? We actually probably do need better protection on the interior of our line. You know what? We actually, maybe if we're not investing in Chris Carson, we need to find someone else that can do what Aaron Jones can do. Those kinds of running backs are hard to find. Don't get me wrong. Then be innovative with your run game. I mean, it is okay to look at another roster and say, you need those pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you thought 2020 was the Seahawks ceiling. Congratulations if you did, but like, it shouldn't be. It wasn't to me.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. It was a missed opportunity, I believe. I believe that this team was better than the results that they got. I believe that this team has in 2020, Stacey, they had the talent enough to advance. They had the talent enough to, if they would have played the New Orleans Saints, I think that is a great matchup and a great game. I don't know what happens. I'm not going to sit there and go, well, if they would have played the Saints, they would have won that game. I'm not saying that, but they certainly would have made a game out of it where anything could have happened, right? And so as you look at that moving forward, yeah, there's key pieces as you and key roster decisions that you have to look at here in 2020. But ultimately, Stacey, when you look at this group, I just really hope that game that they witnessed over the weekend really, really makes them look hard in the mirror like they did in 2011, Stacey. John Schneider and Pete Carroll, they looked at some of the games that they had and were completely outmatched up front, and they said, never again. Never again will we get bullied like that. And I really hope that that's what they saw again, as you watch the Green Bay Packers and every other team have offensive lines that can control the game.
All right, so we tried a new final segment next week. It was so much fun. We're going to bring it back. We're going to make this a regular thing. So here's how it's going to work. On the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710, you are going to text a question. It's called What You Need to Know. So you're going to say something like, what I need to know. What do the Seahawks need then to be a Super Bowl team? What I need to know. How serious is that rumor about Adam Gase? What I need to know. Jake, are you really telling me you like pineapple on your pizza? What I need to know. Jake,
which I
why
do
are
not.
You a
don't,
grown man
don't
afraid
associate
of needles?
Me with that.
What I need to know. That's coming up next. 710-710.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
It's What You Need to Know, wrapping up the show every single day with this one. Now, you need to text us, 710-710, Busy Hard Seltzer text line. I need to know blank. Here we go, Jake. I need to know, do you really think the Seahawks could have beat the Packers? No. Sorry.
No, I don't.
A little blunt.
No, I don't, but I do think it would be a good game. I do think it would be a closer game to what the Rams did. I believe that the Seahawks offense would fare much, much better than the Rams did against the Green Bay Packers. I think it would be more of a shootout than anything else.
Chris and Enumclaw, I just got off work and I was happy. Then I heard you guys say something about Adam Gase being looked at as the new OC. I don't think it's a good fit. I need to know if you guys do. Chris, I do not.
Yeah, I don't think this is a good fit. And more so than anything else, what I believe that Pete Carroll and John Schneider are doing is they're showing and proving that they're doing their due diligence. Now, some people would come in and say, well, doing your due diligence, why would you even interview Gase for the job? Well, I think that they are exploring every single option. I would not anticipate everybody out there who is seeing this. Calm down. I don't think Adam Gase is going to be your offensive coordinator of the future. And if that is the case, then I am really going to be worried. But I do not think that is the case. The name that I would be curious, though, is the name that was right underneath that same report is quarterback coach for the Kansas City Chiefs, Mike Kafka. That one actually excites me and is intriguing to me because he would have, if Bieniemy gets a head coaching job, Mike Kafka would be the OC for the Kansas City Chiefs. It's already pretty much been said that he would be promoted in-house. So if you're looking for somebody who's innovative, who's on the cutting edge, who is a part of the best offensive group in football, that's a Kansas City Chiefs. And so I think Kafka will be an interesting one, but ultimately I don't believe he'll end up getting the job because he doesn't have the background that Pete Carroll was looking for in terms of establishing a run game.
Or the respect. I mean, his whole locker room, it felt like, turned on him. A guy you traded for basically said, this guy doesn't care about winning as much as I do.
Yeah, and Jamal Adams would probably not be a big fan of that.
I wouldn't be. Count me in. The 206, without a question at all, just says, pineapple does belong on pizza. I'm judging you.
Yeah. No way.
No, it doesn't. Get out of here. No, don't go. Don't go anywhere. what I need to know, what's your favorite donut? I like maple bars. They are my all-time favorite. I don't know if you guys have ever been to Chuck's Donut in Renton.
I haven't.
So good.
I haven't.
So good. Curtis, have you? Oh, Mike not potted up there. My bad. The Chuck's Donut in Renton, they like frost it on. Think of not glazed or anything and not even like the Safeway frosting, but it's like you frosted a cake.
That
does
sound
good.
Maple bars are definitely a favorite in the Heaps household. Jackson, my four-year-old, is definitely the most he's the most adventurous. Another one that we really like is apple fritters.
Different kind of flavors.
He does go for different kinds
Brock
of flavors,
loves apple
but
fritters.
Apple fritters are very, very underrated. Very underrated.
Very first interview I had at this place, like that when I was interviewing for a job, I started out on the digital side. I was in the lobby. This was in 2017. Like summer 2017, and Brock Heward, who I'd never met before, walked by and goes, do you like apple fritters? He was walking around, hanging on to like three...
Totally normal thing to ask.
Very on brand. Hanging on to a box of apple fritters, handing them out to people. And I was like, what is this place? All right. I need to know, how can the Seahawks improve the O-line with big upcoming free agent contracts and a lack of draft capital? That is a great question. I think that what they can look at is potential cap casualties with other teams, with the salary cap going down to 175. Mm-hmm. I think you also look at using some of those draft picks. I mean, you still have them, not in the first round, but you still got them.
You still have a second round pick.
Using a second rounder. I'm not sure how strong this class is. I haven't started any kind of draft
review. Joe Thunney from the Patriots, and you do have Brandon Scherff. Those are two really, really good guards, like really top flight guards that would be a dream if they were here in Seattle. So that is at the top of the market. But you're looking at $14 to $15 million, somewhere in that price range for them. Maybe that price goes down. I mean, we were looking at Jack Conklin and going, yeah, he's way too far out of the Seahawks price range, just looking at it initially. But his contract that he actually ended up signing for would have been cheaper if you had combined the three big contracts that they ended up signing for with Brandon Schell, BJ Finney, and Cedric Ebwehi. They would have been all cheaper if you put those contracts together. So they might not be as much out of range as you think. And yeah, you're going to have to make tough decisions. There's going to be some tough decisions on your own roster, but if you believe that you're developing young talent like this group feels like they are, then you're going to have to make some sacrifices, and I do believe it's worth it to upgrade your offensive line.
I need to know from the 509, what's on your workout playlist? I do a lot of hip-hop, mostly.
I am a mix. I am hip-hop and rock as well. So it goes back and forth for me. It goes all the way to my high school days. At Skyline, it would just be all over the place what we would listen to. But
Any artist shout-outs?
I think about it.
Specifically from your Skyline days.
We,
it's like 07, 08.
From high school.
Yeah, young like Jock. Mims.
Shout-out to Chingy.
Yeah.
Chingy. Wow.
Just a real sweet spot of music.
Really, I think the go-to was Disturbed.
Hawthorne Heights.
Oh, Disturbed.
Yeah, like serious hard-o rock out.
Wow,
yeah.
There's a whole side to Jake we don't know about.
Yes.
Jake with eyeliner. JNCO jeans.
I wouldn't go that far.
I need to know, why didn't the Seahawks use tight ends more in the pass game? This is such an underrated part of some of the issues I had with their pass game, by the way, and I don't know if the answer will ever be because the position group underperformed or there were health issues or because they weren't incorporated more, but it's one of the first years in a while that I can remember a tight end didn't pop up on the list of top targets or yards until spot number like 4, 5, 6.
This would be two things. Number one, I don't believe that they were schemed up properly to be able to get more targets. You look at Hollister and what he was able to do. Hollister's a very good receiving tight end in this league, and finding creative ways to get him the ball, I think that they missed out on opportunities for that. Disley is a good, solid tight end in the league. I don't think he's a game breaker anymore. This was, unfortunately, the year that I saw him kind of lose a step with some of those injuries, but I hope that after a year being away, removed from, you know, two serious leg injuries, that maybe he bounces back. But not utilizing Greg Olsen enough to me was disappointing. And the second thing, Stacey, is in the second half of the season, I do think Russ didn't look Greg Olsen's way enough. There were a few opportunities that I think he missed. And so I believe it's a combination of game planning and then Russell Wilson having full confidence in his tight end group to look at them on third downs, first and second down, trusting those guys to win.
I need to know, I'm going to assume this is when it comes to sports, are you a romantic or a realist? I guess you could go pessimistic or optimistic when it comes to sports. I think I tend to stray toward being a realist, but then I get yelled at for it.
Well, so who cares? I mean, that's the way you look at it. I mean,
I know.
Here's the thing. You were right, ultimately. You were right, right?
I was.
At the end of the season, you were right. You were saying, hey, these are serious problems and serious issues.
Yeah.
And you were ultimately right. To me, I'm more of the optimist.
It's more fun to be that way.
Well, it's not necessarily more fun to be that way.
Yeah, but you enjoy the ride more.
Well, okay. Yeah, you do. But I think that when you look at your group, it's about what can you do right, right? What do you have the ability to do right in order to get your guys in proper positions so that they can perform up to their abilities, right? This offense, as you look at it, and what I was preaching is, look at the fourth quarter and the second half. Fourth quarter of the 49ers game, second half of the Rams game. They did some really good things offensively. If they can tap into that on a more consistent basis, they have everything that they need to be successful. The problem is they weren't doing that on a consistent basis.
Yep.
And therefore, you were right. Therefore, their offensive struggles showed up at the worst time and in the worst way.
All right, we got to get out of here. Jake's going to be listening to some Disturbed on the way home. I have no doubt about it.
Oh, rocking out. Let's go.
I'm going to go get maple bars. This has been Jake and Stacey. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob is next on 710 ESPN Seattle.